We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route.
Lee Oswald has been shot.
Paddock fired out of two adjoining rooms using a device similar to a hammer to smash the windows.
Several flying saucers there of extraterrestrial origin.
Digging Chris Graves.
Hello, welcome back to Digging Chris Graves, yours truly. I am very honored to have my guest tonight, Mr. Charlie Robinson of Macro Aggressions and Union of the Unwanted. Welcome, Mr. Robinson.
Thanks for having me. I was watching your intro and it kind of reminded me. I live right down the street from Columbine.
Do you? Wow. Now, have you been there for?
I just have to drive by it, down by the street that it's on. Wow. To get to most places where I'm going, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I always thought you were from Vegas.
I've been in Colorado now for 7 years, but I was in Vegas for 10 years. So I wasn't living here when okay. the shooting happened. Yeah. It's just recently, but given the line of work I'm in and the proximity and driving by that one, you just kind of go, that was the original thing that kind of got on my radar as far as like, that was like the OG of school shootings.
It was, I always refer to it, and maybe it's not appropriate, but it was like the 9/11 of the school shooting phenomenon, basically.
Yeah, really, it was.
Always refer to it every time we have another one of these, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Now that you mentioned that, and you could tell me this is none of my business, if it's not my business or anything, but having lived near there, have you had local people ever talk to you about the weirdness that surrounds that event?
No. And I also haven't asked, I haven't really asked. It's fun. I don't know there. I know that there's a little bit of nonsense surrounding it, but it wasn't one that I ever really did too deep of a dive into.
But
I do know that there's quite a bit there. There's quite a bit there.
That's what I've been trying to place too.
It also reminds me, we've got the JonBenet Ramsey type stuff and the connections to this area and
the military industrial complex. I heard there's Lockheed Martin's right there, right? There's all
Lockheed. I can look out my window and see Lockheed Martin.
Oh yeah. So there's a lot of connections. And then you get into the Aurora Batman movie theater thing. That's, I heard, kind of close by as well.
It's not too far. I drove by a place. There's a memorial park there for it. Yeah. And then there's of course the Denver airport, which is wild. Okay. I mean, like they've taken a lot of the paintings down. They've been remodeling it, but the paintings were there. And not only were they there where they were remodeling the airport, which they're still currently doing, they would have big sections of like where retail had been. And it would be, boarded over as if to say like, this part is closed because it's under construction, like the way it was a reasonable way to do it. But on the boarding, they had made these really nice signs that went on it. And it said, like, pardon our dust, we're under construction for one of the following reasons. A, the lizard people are updating their underground lair.
Of course.
B, the network of underground trains and tunnels need to be fixed. Or C, we're expanding the retail complex. And then next to it is a gigantic picture of a chameleon lizard wearing a crown.
I think I've seen
they're just fucking with us.
Yes. Yes. And they actually, I think even before the renovation, they had some kind of TV display that was going on that made fun of the whole thing too.
They have
a blue horse. I heard. I've done a
blue horse out front. Yeah. That's still a big statue. They call it Blucifer. Even the news calls it Blucifer. It's bright blue with red eyes. It killed the maker of it. It fell on him. So there's that. There is a big inscription, like a plaque to the New World Airport Commission with a Freemason sign on it. And then there's a gargoyle coming out of a suitcase that's up top. And if you sit there long enough, it'll make noises and talk to you.
Really?
But it's on like a long loop. Cause I've sat there for like 20 minutes waiting cause I was waiting for luggage and just stood next to it. And it didn't do it, but sometimes it'll do it. So yeah, they're having some fun with people.
I always thought it was just a continuity of government, a COG like facility that was, you know, before 9/11 that they just were working on over and over.
Well, I think it is because there was no need to move the airport out of Stapleton to where DIA is. It's out in the boonies, and they spent, you know,
a lot
three times as much money as they should have, and it took them a whole lot longer than it should have. And they're already renovating it again with like another $1 billion of renovation when it didn't need it in the first place. So they're definitely doing something underground. I mean, I think that's well known. I've got a sponsor to my show who's been out here for a long, long time, who's a nuclear physicist, and he's got all sorts of stories about underground tunnels, and he's been down in them before too. So he goes, I can tell you with 100% certainty that they're real and that they exist because I've been down there. And he went into an office that was down there and they were like, what are you doing down here? He says, I'm looking for someone to ask about this. They're like, we have got to get you out of here. So anyway, he's got stories. So yeah, the whole place is weird. But yeah, I heard that it's the speaking of continuity of government, it's the relocation for Washington, D.C. in the event of an emergency. So
I had heard that, yeah, it was Washington, D.C. West. I heard it referred to as. And I think during 9/11, I think when Rumsfeld actually officially greenlit the COG or whatever you want to call it, continuity of government, I think a lot of stuff was going on there as well, besides Washington and everything. And, going backwards here, I've actually stood in front of those murals too that you were talking about, because I flew in there once to go to Fort Collins to visit a friend, and that was so odd. Just the way that just seemed like depictions of like Nazi jackbooted thugs like stepping on children's heads with
gas masks on, a sword in one hand, an AK-47 in the other hand. And then behind them, like what looks like fallout. And then all of these children, all these dead children in front of them that are all like from different countries dressed like different, like the little Dutch girl looks like she's, you know, wearing like Dutch outfits. The Chinese boy just dressed like he's from China.
And different religions too, I heard.
Yeah, it's it was every bit, you know, it's like, are you nervous about your trip? Are you kind of scared of flying?
Yeah.
Here, take a look at this death and destruction scene. Have a great flight, everybody. You know, it's really
a new world holocaust up. Right here. Flight. You want peanuts? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's the epitome of weirdness right there. But
yeah, for sure.
But I interviewed you for my show, Get Mad, with on Shelley.com. And I appreciate you taking the time then too.
Thanks for having me on that one.
I'm glad that I'm able to see you this time. This is like a different venture for me. So for those that didn't get to hear the Get Mad episode, let's just do like a real short like recap of basically not, I don't want to be like, let's do a very, very short like recap of your whole life and everything you've ever learned and researched. It. I don't mean it like that. You've written two books so far, right?
Three.
Three. That's right. Yeah. I didn't know if you were on the cusp of having another one. Would that be a fourth one, or
I'm
just came out, right?
Thinking, the third one came out the end of 2021. I'm thinking of book number four.
I hope you do. Okay, all right. Okay, cool. So going back to your first book, The Octopus of Global Control, I was always intrigued by that because at first I had thought maybe you had, this was a book going into the Danny Casaloro like murder and things like that. But it's actually, it's way beyond his story and what he was looking into. Can you just tell the folks out there basically the background on that and with the promise technology? And I believe it is the promise, right? Not Echelon. I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was acutely aware of the fact that Danny Casaloro was 44 years old writing a book called The Octopus when he wound up dead in a hotel bathtub from allegedly killing himself, even though he was scared of blood. And I was 44 years old writing a book called The Octopus of Global Control about some of these same control structures. And I was most definitely not looking to end up in a hotel bathtub myself. So I know what Danny wrote about. And, you know, those people are in my octopus book too, you know, but I wanted to go into a much, that first book came out of a conversation I had many, many years earlier where I realized during this conversation that the person that I was talking to about these sorts of government control issues didn't view me as being an authority on this topic at all. They just said, you know, they didn't necessarily come it right out and say it, but it was sort of like, who do you think you are? You know, like, what do you know about this? And what I realized was that it wasn't really important what I thought about these events. If instead of me telling this person about how all this stuff works, what if this person was hearing it from Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and George Bush and David Rockefeller and the Rothschilds and, you know, Prince Philip and all of these other people that are on the record talking about all of these crazy things and how they want a world government and how they plan to go about it. And, you know, all of these sort of unusual topics that you don't hear about on your nightly news. You know, take me out of it. What if you heard them? You know, if I want to tell you that there's the New World Order, you can go get out of here with that Alex Jones stuff. And I go, okay, well, what about this? What if I showed you, what if I put together a compilation video of George H.W. Bush mentioning the New World Order 200 times during his 4 years in office? Would you believe it then? Would you believe it's a real thing? If I've got the Queen talking about it and I've got Prince Charles and I've got, you know, all of the boogeymen out there all talking about this New World Order, would it make a little bit more sense? Would you still want to fit me for a tinfoil hat? If it's like, I'm not the one calling, I didn't come up with the name New World Order. Right. Neither did Alex Jones. Right. This is what they call it. Yeah. And they are very open about it. And they write books and they talk about it in public speeches and they talk about it in classified memos that wind up becoming declassified and they get leaked out and all this stuff. And so what I thought was, when I write this book, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to use my words so much. I'm going to use their words. I'm going to paint the picture using when if I'm going to write it about wanting one world government, I'm going to show you 17 different examples of all these different people whose names you recognize also talking openly about how they are planning a one world government. Because then you go, oh God, I didn't know this was out there. And it's like, yeah, it's out there. I'm not making this up. I couldn't make this up. So again, it was less about, obviously my opinion's in the book. I wrote it. So my opinion is through there, and it's got a really dark sense of humor running through it, you know? So I had some fun with it. So it's not just Rockefellers and Rothschilds. There's a lot of George Carlin. There's Bill Hicks. There's Joe Rogan. You know, there's the comedians that see this stuff from a different angle and they're able to paint it a little bit differently. And you go, oh, that's really funny. Oh, and I get it. You know? So, so I wanted to bring in all these different voices to bolster my argument that this is really happening and talk about, and then I identify this 8 tentacled octopus. And we go through each of the tentacles and sort of describe, you know, what does the military tentacle look like? And what does the covert tentacle look like? And how does the medical industry run? And, yeah. And again, not just me saying how I think the medical industry runs, you know, we'll put the acknowledgement of Pfizer paying the largest criminal fine in the history of the planet Earth. Yeah. You know, we'll put that in there. And so when I say that the pharmaceutical industry are run by convicted felons, I'm not kidding. Here's proof. They've all been found guilty in courts of law for felonies.
Yeah.
You know, so again, it's like, bring in this article, bring in this. So it
I'll you're tell you using what, their own sources against
using
them.
Their own sources. Yeah.
I love that.
And this, you know how everyone goes, oh, the book was so much better than the movie. I think if I turn this into a series, which I have a desire to do, I think it will be one of the few times where people will say, I think the series is better than the book, because the ability to bring the voices to life, you know, that, cause there's 700 quotes from 500 different people right. in the book, you know,
right.
And the book is thick, but it reads really fast because you get, you know, you go through a paragraph or two and then you're onto a quote. And you're like, oh wow, you know. So it yeah. kind of keeps you hooked in there. I think that's one of the reasons.
If you see them, quote after quote after quote, that's a different animal altogether.
It is,
and that really seeps.
it really hammers home the point for a lot of people. I think when they just go, God, you know, I
can't believe
I thought this stuff was fake, but like to hear. You know, you go like, I know you guys hate Hillary Clinton, but it's because you're all Republicans. And it's like, no, I'm not a Republican. No. I hate Hillary Clinton for a variety of different reasons that the Republicans don't even know about. I hate her for this. I hate her for saying this and for doing this. We came, we saw he died, and they stick a knife up Gaddafi's ass. And I hate her for shaming the women that accused her husband of rape.
Exactly.
Yep. You know, I hate her for a variety of reasons. And once again, when you're a public figure like that and you do a lot of talking in front of microphones, it all winds up somewhere. And if you're good enough at digging, I've got to say, I don't think there's anybody better at digging than you because you send me stuff every single day that I go, I've never even heard of this. You know what I mean? Like you are.
I'm always hoping someone can use it. Like for
you're a researcher's researcher. You've got great stuff. So for those out there that don't know, Chris is.
I appreciate.
He's one of the best researchers out there for sure. So anyway.
Well, I appreciate that, but I know I do that ad nauseum though too, because I'm always sitting there.
I know the feeling.
I keep thinking someone could use this for their show or their book or their own research, and then maybe they could piggyback off of that. Never once thinking that, you know, give me credit or anything. I just, if I find something, I'm like, this person. Anyway, but moving on.
Well, we appreciate it.
You do, definitely. There's other people that I've pissed off, let's just say.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe not everybody shares my level of appreciation, but I was just talking to Johnny Vedmore today from Unlimited Hangout, and we were talking about how like you get on like a topic when you're writing and you just get obsessed with it, and it starts taking you down a rabbit hole, and then it goes down to something else and it goes down to something else, and you know, you're making all these connections. And there's a, like he described it as like almost like a drug high, like a euphoria when you discover for yourself something that nobody else has found, when you go, God, this, I think, and that comes from just having like enough, doing it long enough and having enough knowledge to know a bunch of these names and company names and people and names of people and names of organizations. And you go, wait a second. This rings a bell. What do I know that? And you go, oh yeah, it's connected to that guy. And you go, wait, I would have never made that connection. That's a really amazing feeling. But it's very distracting when you're writing a book, because you wind up then, because like Johnny said to me, he goes, I'm writing this book. And he goes, well, actually I'm writing 3 books. And I go, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like only a writer would say that. And another writer would go, I know exactly what you're talking. When you say I'm writing 1 book, actually I'm writing 3, because you start coming down, you could start going, this, though connected to the first thing I was searching for, this is its own thing. I've got to move it off to the side.
Oh my God. And then you get distracted more. And it's like, oh, this chapter is a whole encyclopedia. I could, oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one right now that it was, I'll say it right now. It was kind of like a high when I found out about the Carlyle Group purchasing the JFK Library in Boston. And very shortly before the Boston bombing. And then on the day of the Boston bombing, there were reports that there was a third bomb at the library, not at the marathon. Mm-hmm. And just so happens that all the destruction was in the archives room of the JFK Library. And who is a part of the Carlyle Group? George H.W. Bush and the Bin Laden brother or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when I found that out, I'm like, oh my God, I got to tell Don Jeffries. He's going to put it in hidden history 3, 4, 5, you know. So yes, it can be intoxicating when you feel like you're onto something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can't turn it off either. That's the problem. So you're sort of like haunted.
Try to
by
get
it.
Sleep when I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now going back to actually something that really got me going and a lot of people, and that was the events of Tuesday, September 11, 2001. Mm-hmm. Forgive me if I haven't, if you've said this, told this story over and over again, but where were you? Like, what was your experience on that fateful day?
I was not in Manhattan. I was in Manhattan Beach, California, living with three roommates. I remember that we had there's a fifth guy over staying the night because they, my roommate and this other guy were going to go early in the morning to catch a flight to Portland from LA. And at 6 a.m, the other guy, he's a friend of mine too, is banging on my door going, you need to get up, get up, get up. And he just let himself in. And I remember he was shaking me awake. And I was he's like, you've got to get up. You've got to come out and see what's going on TV. I was like, okay. So we went upstairs. We watched it like everybody on the couch. I'd love to be able to say, oh, I knew right then and there it was all fake. I didn't have the back stories. I was a normie back then. I just didn't know what I didn't know. And,
I just knew about UFOs and JFK. That was about it. Even Columbine, I hadn't researched.
I mean, I knew JFK was nonsense. Of course, I think everyone really did. But but I wasn't. I didn't even really get very suspicious about 9/11 until 2 years after it. I didn't really look into it. I was doing other things, so it wasn't really an interest of mine until we started making the case to go into Iraq.
Yep.
And they were saying like, well, you know, Saddam Hussein and 9/11. And I was like, what? Like, what are we talking about here? You know? So as soon as they started trying to tie those two things together, I just said, this sounds like, I said, well, first of all, my initial thought was, well, this Iraq invasion is total bullshit. This is just makeup for, he's going to go get Saddam Hussein because
for his daddy,
you know, his daddy, you know, he's going to go right the wrongs of his dad, you know. But again, I didn't know who George H.W. Bush really was at this time. I just thought he was a kind of
a wimp, right?
He called him a wimp and he said he didn't want to eat his broccoli and I don't have to eat my broccoli if I don't want to eat my broccoli. And you know, and I just always thought of him as like a corny guy, you know. I had no idea what a dangerous sociopath George H.W. Bush was. I would put him in the top 10 worst people of the 20th century. Honest to God, I have him that high.
Yeah.
And I had no idea who he was. And so when they tried to tie it to Iraq, I got suspicious and I thought, well, this whole Iraq thing is nonsense. And then it was like, well, if they're willing to just so brazenly tie it to a real event like 9/11, maybe 9/11 isn't so much of a real event as it seems. And so I think in 2003, I had my first questions about it all. And I think by 2005, I was like, nothing adds up. You know, the whole story doesn't add up. And then it's a, as you know, it's a it builds on itself. You know, the more you know about this, then it leads you down. You go, well, I need to know more. And look, I'm here now 15 plus years into this, and I can't with 100% accuracy tell you exactly how 9/11 played out. You know, I mean, I got some ideas, I mean, pretty good ones, but every last detail of it, I'm open to it. You know, I'm open to listening to other, you know, I know that some of it is just disinformation. I know some of it's real. I know some of it is, but I'll watch the remote viewers, remote view 9/11. I'll watch it.
You had a special on that.
Did a show on it. Yeah. I'm open to that. Do I think that they know exactly what's going on? I don't know, but I'm willing to hear all sides of it and then use what I know to, you know, to kind of filter it out. But in the end, even if, you know, and there's like camps that want to argue with each other, like the no plane people versus the plane people and everything. It's like, I get it. You know, we all want to just say this is, you know, so-and-so did it in the study with the pipe, you know, boom, boom, boom. It's like clue. You're like, we've got it down, but I don't care about that about all of us agreeing on anything necessarily. Mm-hmm. As long as we agree on the overriding theme, which is
the story
false flag attack,
yep,
to draw America into a unwinnable war in the middle, to remake the Middle East to benefit our allies and to put a lot of money in the pockets of some very powerful people. And, you know, a variety of agendas came out of it. So as long as we understand that it's not 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, we're good. You know, I don't need full buy-in from everybody to believe my version of events, and I don't need to believe their version of events fully. Just as long as we can agree that this was done with foreknowledge, intentionally, and by us and our own allies that were deeply involved in this. And it was shameful to watch Americans behave like savages after that and go pull Sikhs out of 7-Elevens and beat them up because they don't know the difference between Muslims and Hindus and, you know, things like that. It really exposed our ignorance as Americans. And, you know, we claim to be this melting pot and then we're just like, they're all brown. So we're going to get them all. It's like, okay, that's a dumb idea. But so we went through a lot, but I'll tell you what I learned, maybe even the most from 9/11. I learned about the power of the media. I mean, I learned that the media can just take something and make you not believe your own eyes. You know, they can get you, if they're good enough, they can get you to believe absurdities. And if you can believe absurdities, you will be one step closer to committing atrocities. And right, that is where we are as a civilization. We're being taught to not believe what we see. You know, we're being taught, well, no, you don't see that. Here's the truth over here. And the media, you've got Jacinda Ardern saying the only source of truth will be what you hear from us. Don't listen to anything else unless you hear it from us. And you go, God, is that George Orwell up there talking? So I came out of 9/11 with a deep distrust of the American government, obviously, but equally as distrustful for the mainstream media.
Yeah. Yeah, my thing, me personally, I remember these reports on the day and even the day after of explosions going on. Reporters like Pat Dawson of NBC was talking about it, Rick Sanchez of MSNBC, and Jack Kelly of USA Today. He was talking about how the FBI found these vans that were packed with explosives in the Twin Towers, and that they possibly helped bring the buildings down, and they found devices. And so all that went away in that first day or two.
And you know this as well as I do. When it comes to these events, the best source of information is the first 24 hours. You're going to get things that come out. If you just hit record on every news broadcast and hold on to that information and compare it to the narrative a year or two down the line, what you'll notice is that certain parts of what you heard will just, you'll never hear them again. And it's the same with just about every sort of false flag operation. There'll be some truth that kind of comes out until they get the cover-up squad on team, you know, on scene to stop that. And then it ends. So
JFK Jr. right off the bat, there were reports out of Boston. I even met the woman, Susan Warnick of Channel 5, CVB. I went to school with high school with her, her niece. She was at my graduation, actually. She talked to a guy named Todd Bergen, who was a Coast Guard spokesperson out of Boston, that confirmed that JFK Jr. called, radioed the tower at Martha's Vineyard, and was awaiting landing instructions. The only reason we have that footage to this day is because of Bill Cooper and his people that he had on the ground in New Hampshire that went and got the footage before they cut 6 hours out of it that made any reference to Todd Bergen and the radio call. And the explosion in the sky, which there were three witnesses that claimed they saw an explosion at the time that John's plane was going down. So, yeah. So when you say in the first 24 hours, I agree with you. But what I always love to see is that mainstream media likes to say that the worst information is in the first 24 hours. They always turn it around. They say that's the most unreliable because, well, I'll grant you, there could be mistakes in the reporting. Sure. But for the most part, you're getting closer to the truth in those the first reports than later on when everything gets cemented, you know, like the official narrative.
Yeah. And I used to think that, and it's a logical thought process, but I used to think that when that the mainstream media was telling the truth, when ABC, CBS, NBC, they'd all, you know, the main theme of it would all be exactly the same. And there might be minor variations, but I would say, well, if they're not contradicting each other and theoretically it's a contest to see who gets the best information, because if you get the best information, more viewers will watch your channel and you'll win, you know, whatever that ratings means, but you'll get the best ratings and you'll be known as having the best reporters and the best sources. And you're there first and you're asking the right questions and talking to the right people. I always thought it was a contest between the three of them to see who would get the best stuff. And there'd be little fringe stuff. And then I'd say, well, apparently they all agree on the main topic of it, so it must be true, you know. And that's the assumption you make before you understand who
there might be really a script to this that they all get at the same time. Right.
In my mind, it's they're all saying the same thing because it's unequivocally true. And what in reality, it's they're all saying the same thing because that's just what the script says.
Case in point, Building 7 with the BBC.
In every now and then, announcing the collapse of a building 25 minutes before the building actually goes down is one thing, but to have the actual building over the shoulder of Jane Stanley is remarkable. I mean, from time to time we get lucky and we see their incompetence and their criminality on full display. And that was an example of it.
And I'll do you one even better than that, that no one really talks about. CNN announced that building went down at almost 11 a.m. that morning.
Did they?
Yeah. And I forget the exact name of the anchor. I can get that to you afterwards. But yeah, that's on record as I think that building was supposed to come down around that time because the CNN announced that building, a 47-story building, went down. And it was around 10:45, almost 11-ish, you know?
Yeah.
So even more than the BBC, that was glaring as it is. So,
that's why
the
cover of Controlled Demolition, you know, I mean, talk about
Building 7 with the, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So it's essentially, I wanted, when I was working on the cover for this book, I went through several choices.
Who designed the cover, by the way? Just
I designed it with a graphic designer. I told him how I wanted it. What I wanted initially was a film strip. You know how you get the old with four pictures and like the film, I don't know what you call it, but like the film, you know, so it looks like a film strip of the building showing like the motion of it going down, but it was too busy for the cover and it wasn't working. And finally, the graphic designer actually said, why don't we just use one picture? I go, I can't use one picture because I want it to show motion. And he said, what if you just pick the third picture, the third out of the four pictures in the frame?
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I went, that's what it's going to be. It's going to, you know, cause it needs to sort of show, you need to be able to look at it in 1 second and recognize, first of all, it's a building going down. You for those of us that know, it's not just a building, it's the building, it's building seven. And having it wrapped in an American flag, I think, was more sort of sent the symbolically shows like this is the end of America. And I think that, you know, if we're being honest with ourselves, that was a turning inside the fourth turning, as Tony Ordburn and I talked about on the radio show, you know, where you get these 20-year cycles. And there's four 20-year cycles in a bigger 80-year cycle. And that final turning is called the fourth turning, that 80th year. Yeah. And you go from the American Revolution to World War One is an 80-year cycle. You go from World War One to 9/11 or to American Revolution to the Civil War. The Civil War to World War II is an 80-year cycle. And then World War II to where we are now, and in these 20-year blocks, blocks of 20 years. And, you know, 9/11 was the end of the third turning, and now COVID is the fourth turning. And so you get into this, this new era, so to speak. And it's relatively predictable when you go back and look through history. And when Berwick and I wrote this book, I said, like, we're going to have to make he said to me in a conversation before we even, when we were the first conversation we had about the book, he said, it's all coming down. And I go, what do you mean? You know, like, I think I know what he means, but he goes, he goes, you know, like the financial system's just a house of cards. I was like, oh yeah, yeah. He goes, it's just all coming down. It's all coming down. And I go, like a controlled demolition. And he's like, yeah. And I said, I've got an idea. So then I wrote it all out. And I wrote out this whole, like, you know, sort of like outline of it, like we'll do this and this and this, and we'll just show this pattern. And he'd sent me some ideas, and he said, what do you think of this? And then I sent him, I said, I've got an idea based on our conversation that we had when you mentioned it's all coming down. In my mind, like building seven, how do you take building seven down? You you pre-weaken the building, you identify the support columns, you rig the detonators, you push down the plunger, you clear the debris, boom, boom, like an 8-step process for taking this down. I sent it all over to him. I remember his email back to me was, I like your idea better. That was it.
When you mentioned the film strip, I thought you were going the Zapruder film route, because Building 7 has been referred to, I think even by Charlie Sheen, maybe coined this at one point, that Building 7 was like the Zapruder film festival. And it really was.
I didn't even think of that in the context of the film strip, but now that you mention it, yeah, for sure. I was just thinking of it in terms of showing motion. Tough to show motion on a static book cover.
That
the building was coming down. Yeah. So in fact, what's funny is that the guy who added, the artist added a little bit of extra smoke to the bottom of the building, but he said, when I did it with octopus tentacles in the smoke as a nod to you. So thank you. Oh, and by the way, do you have this book?
I don't. I have the PDF.
Get it, and then email me. And there's we've got an Easter egg buried in this thing.
Really?
That's very few people know of. But if you get the physical copy of the book and then send me an email, I'll let you know what it is.
Okay. Yeah.
And you'll appreciate it.
Of I won't put it down until I find it. Until I find it, I won't put it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'll be.
You won't be able to find it. I assure you, it requires a cipher to find it, to figure it out.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you. You went Da Vinci Code on us, right?
A little bit, yeah. I told Jeff, I said, I got an idea for this cover that'll blow people's minds. And then I said, but I need some money. I need some money for it. And he says, okay. I said, I need to pay a guy. And he goes, okay. I said, just give me some money. I'll pay this guy. He said, all right. I said, don't ask any questions. He goes, okay. Only Jeff Berwick you can do that with. And he goes, oh, I get it. Yeah, no problem. Here's money. Go do what you need. All right, I got
you. A little on the nose. Okay, all right, I got you. Well, going back to when I started to wake up with this particular event or series of events, because I even include the DC sniper attacks and the anthrax attacks, which actually the anthrax attacks, I believe, leads all the way up to where we are right now with COVID.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
100%. You've got the same people involved.
Yeah. And they reversed things for Fauci, too, in terms of being able to do gain of function, I believe. I think I just stumbled upon that a couple of weeks ago, where they like reversed something. Because what it, I don't want to quote it wrong, but I think it was 1967 or 69. There was like an act where you couldn't develop bioweapons anymore for, at a certain point. And I think with the anthrax attacks, it kind of reversed that for people like Fauci, and it gave him a green light to start up the process again of gain of function and things like that. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to say that that's 100%, but it's along those lines, I believe.
Well, we've got Tara O'Toole, who's a key figure in the anthrax attacks, and showing up at running event 201.
Yeah. She was Dark Winter as well.
And right? Dark Winter, yeah.
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 Because I found those tapes. Like people go, oh yeah, they'll never fake footage. Like when things like Sandy Hook, I'm not saying it was fake, but it's things like the Boston bombing too. They will record and film things for exercises and drills, and people just don't get that through their heads. There's like footage as if Dark Winter
as if
was
it's
a
today.
Real
thing. You they'll play the footage like it's from the event. Yeah. But the footage is actually pre-recorded from a training drill well in advance. Right. Again, in Acapulco 2019, at the hotel bar till 2:45 in the morning with Ole Damegard talking about what to look for in false flags. I'm like, I've got the guy. I've got the guy who's you know. Who's,
with the shoes, the piles of shoes.
We're talking shoes. We're talking bicycles. We're talking advanced knowledge of giving
two
you
or three suspects. Then it goes down to one or two in terms of.
We're talking about a lady wearing sweatpants in an event, and then two that says Las Vegas down the side of it, and then 2 weeks later the Las Vegas shooting. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're talking about advanced knowledge, and this is stuff that he was getting from people that were inside the organization that's doing it, that he described as a NATO roadshow, like a rock concert that's on tour going from NATO base to NATO base, plugging these things and doing this. And then he gets contacted by a guy who's part of that group saying, you're really good, but you're missing
something.
You're missing things. Like we embed things in there. You're missing the bicycles. You're missing the shoes. You're missing
calling
the
cards.
Yeah, the calling cards, right.
Like Don Jeffries would say, calling cards, like the pristine bullet on the stretcher, the passport, 9/11, not burned.
Yeah.
They do this on purpose.
Yes, yes.
I always thought that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and that is, you know, that's a whole, Ole did like an hour at an Acapulco, and I was like, you needed three. He's like, I need 3 hours just to get going. You know what I mean? I mean, his whole presentation is could have been, you know, he could have done a David Icke did 4 hours. David Icke just sweating through his shirt, you know, at the end of the fourth hour. And I was like, you need like a David Icke time slot. He's like, I know, you know, to get into that. But it's a fascinating, you know, it's, if you're a geek like us and you like to get into these, you know, examine the pictures, and you feel
it's
like
mysterious.
Like an investigative, you know, you're doing the job of the journalist that should be doing.
They should be,
not.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's like my hunt for the TWA 800 missile videos. People saw them. Thousands of people saw them on cable that night.
I remember that night specifically. I remember I was bartending that night in Redondo Beach, California.
And
I went in and it was on the TV, and it was like a Thursday night or something. There was nobody here, you know, the place was not busy. So I had all night that I had to be there, and I was right underneath that TV just watching the whole thing the whole time.
Did you see one of them?
I didn't see one of them, but I remember thinking that somebody had that they had interviewed somebody who said that they saw something hit it, and I was because I immediately, it was immediately a possibility for me that it was hit with a missile, and I don't know why that was, and it had to have been because one of the eyewitnesses said we saw something go up and hit it, but again, it's like it's live TV. It's
on
live. That's what, 98?
1996, July 7th, 16th, 17th. Yeah. There were videos, Charlie. Bill Cooper even talked about seeing one of them play twice on CNN. He tried to get that footage, like the JFK Jr. footage in New Hampshire. They already got to it. They cut out the first hour. But he talked about seeing it. He didn't mention it on the night's broadcast on his show, Hour of the Time, because he didn't want to speculate. But you could tell in his voice, like a few months later, he wished he had gone back and said something on the night. Because he saw it. Because there were, I'm telling you, Charlie, I've been searching for this. And there was evidence it was on MSNBC. A guy named Jack Cashel wrote a whole book and talks all about that. There was a bidding war between Fox and MSNBC because they were brand new. They apparently won the $50,000 bidding war for a missile video. Not to bore you with all that, but I'm saying I've been searching.
Not boring at all.
No, for anyone out there. All right, he's talking about the missile thing. For people got footage of it. There was a file footage company on the beach that caught it as well.
And really?
75-year-old fisherman in a boat videotaped it. He caught the whole series of events, not because some would only catch like the explosion on their camera. Mm-hmm. Others would only catch like the missiles coming up from the surface and not actually. Then they see a big flash of light or whatever. But this 75-year-old fisherman on a boat out in the ocean actually caught the whole sequence of events. And I've been working on an article that I need to finish. That's all about the hunt for these videos. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring this up to you, Charlie, because you talked to Ole, did he mention anything about NATO being at Columbine?
No. But I didn't talk to him about Columbine.
Because there was footage of a NATO truck that a lot of people saw, like those missile videos. From
a lot of people saw a NATO truck. So when you look back on Operation Gladio.
Yes.
And this is what Ole and I were talking about. So for those that don't know, when the World War II ended and Germany was destroyed, Russia had come all the way up to Berlin and essentially stopped. Yeah. Then the Allies controlled, you know, the western part of from West Berlin on.
Yeah.
There was this fear that once America left and went back home, that Russia was going to continue in advance. Maybe not immediately, but you know, within the next couple of years, they were going to do that. So. They wanted to leave behind some forces to just in case, not necessarily to like single-handedly defeat the Russians, but just enough forces to really screw with them if they started this and buy the Allies some time to get back over and fight the fight. So they had these leave behind groups that NATO created, and it was a mission called Operation Gladio. And they left these basically embedded terrorists, domestic terrorists whose job was if the Russians start advancing, start guerrilla warfare tactics and start, you know, blowing
targeting
up
targeting women and children at supermarkets, things like that.
Well, so initially it was just to deter the Russians, but the Russians never came. So they sat around doing nothing for like 20 years. And finally, what they said was, well, these groups can be very helpful for us if we need them to make a, I don't know, we've got an election coming up in Italy and they're about to elect a socialist and you can't have a social, this is really how NATO got going. You know, in the 47, they said that they're going to elect a socialist. So NATO actually like created some havoc and rigged the election so that it wouldn't be a socialist. It'd be somebody that wasn't a socialist winning the presidential election in Italy because you couldn't have a socialist country join NATO. It was against the charter. So they needed to. So the first act that NATO did was to rig the Italian elections, which is kind of perfectly on brand, right? So now Italy's a part of NATO and they leave behind this group and nothing happens for 20 years, but they realize that they've got a powerful force. And it's these domestic terrorists that have all these really unique skills at how to destabilize things. So the next time Italy's government decides that it might want to kind of entertain the idea of going socialist because the socialist guy is saying that, you know, we're going to disarm the population because there's nothing to worry about here. It's relatively peaceful. Well, this group can go set off some bombs and then make it not peaceful anymore. So now nobody will vote for the socialists. So they can kind of shape policy and perception. So that
the public will go to the government and ask for protection and safety.
Exactly.
They call and it some the of strategy the tactics, of tension, right? Strategy of tension.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the tactics they used: shoot up supermarkets.
Yep.
Buffalo should, you know, shoot up schoolyards. You know, go in and blow up rail stations in Bologna. I mean, so it's like
opera houses, movie theaters. You know,
what have we? We've got railroad. We've got rail stations, railroads blowing up. We've got school shootings. We've got grocery store shootings in Boulder and in.
I was going to say Boulder
and in upstate New York. So like
Buffalo. Yep.
We've got strategy of tension. We've got a strategy of tension, which is exactly what this was coming out of. So again, are school shootings real? Maybe. I mean, I'm sure some kid has brought a gun to school and has done something bad with it, but
are they
made to happen? 100%.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's some school shootings that you can't talk about or else they'll sue you for $1.5 billion.
A trillion even.
A trillion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex Jones is on a repayment program. He's going to pay them $1 a year for the next trillion years.
I thought he borrowed the $2.3 trillion from Rumsfeld for the last lawsuit, but now Rumsfeld kicked the bucket.
I stand corrected. You're right. Yeah, he borrowed it from Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
So dumb. The whole thing's so dumb. So.
Yeah.
You know, we wind up in this situation where
I have where to NATO, ask
if NATO has trucks. Experience doing this. Yeah. You know, so when Ole Damegaard says, "I think it's a NATO traveling roadshow setting off all these false flags," it's easy for just the somebody that knows nothing about this to go, "Oh, that's crazy. Get out of here with that." And you go, "Well, do you know the history of NATO? Like, that's their specialty. It's one of the things they specialize in is domestic terrorism." And so is it that unlikely to think, oh, it's just going to stay there? It's not going to come to America where we can easily manipulate people? Of course it is. And so I think he's right when he says that. And in fact, I know he's right because the people that are involved in doing that have even reached out to him and said, like, "You're on the right track, like respect where respect is due to figuring this out." But he's like, you know, you don't have it all figured out.
Even look at Bill Cooper. I mean, 10 years before Columbine, he was writing about it in Behold the Pale Horse, the whole
Cooper episode and he talked about shootings in schoolyards to inflame pandemics, the anti-gun too, right? Lobby.
Didn't he mention pandemics? Didn't he like pretty much have that in Behold a Pale Horse? Not to put you on the spot, but I think I remember him mentioning something like that too.
I mean, he
9/11 definitely. Alex took the credit for that one.
You sound crazy.
Yeah.
You just sound crazy when you're too early. You sound crazy. That's why, like, when people are like, "Oh, Tucker Carlson's finally talking about some real stuff," I'm like, I would prefer he would talk about it when he would be in the crazy,
right,
category. Right. Like when we were talking about the stuff that he's talking, he feels safe to talk about it now. It's a little edgy, and he's known as like, "Oh, well, he's really like on the edge here." It's like we were talking about that a year ago. You want to impress me? Talk about it when we're talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, but that'll get him thrown off the. So whether it's us a year early or Bill Cooper 10 years early, which he often was, you know, the earlier you are, even Alex Jones, 15 years old, they're turning the frogs gay. Get out of here with that nonsense. And you go, well,
there was something to it, but the way he presented it was over.
Transsexual frogs. And it was kind of not good. So like we have to recognize and understand it. Like these guys, Bill Cooper could see through all the nonsense and further than just about anybody, you know, and you that have to stand in appreciation of that.
Yeah. He didn't have a crystal ball either. People don't realize like, he was studying what was going on at the time in the news and the trends. You see these things over and over again, like shootings, like we were talking about. It's like when that's not working right now, then we'll have an insurrection. It's like they have these things on a shelf. You know, now we'll have an OKC again. Oh,
yeah.
You know,
they're getting too close to this topic. Let's distract them with this topic.
Yeah. But now we're being bombarded daily now.
Yeah. So they're changing topics. We've got the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda inside America. So now it's legal. Yeah. Not that they weren't using it before, of course. Right. But they took the extraordinary step of legalizing it because they intended to use it, which they are using it. And so we're in a place where it's a wonder we get anything right.
Right.
With as much disinformation that's out there, you know, we're also going up against the world leading disinformation industry. And, you know, there's the mainstream media is bad at it, but like the intelligence agencies, they're really good. They're really good about how, you know, understanding the right amount of truth and just the right amount of bullshit to screw something all up. So, yeah. I mean, the fact that we get any of this stuff right is frankly a miracle because we're just swimming upstream all the way. And then on top of that, we're being shadow banned. So the information only gets out a little bit. And when just a little bit of it gets out, you know, when just a few people hear about it, it sounds fringe and kooky. You know, it sounds like, oh, this people are out of their minds over there, but we're not. Like, we've got footnotes, you've got research. I mean, it's like it's only hidden to the extent that people don't go out and seek it, but when you want to find it and you know what you're looking for and you know where to go to look for it and you know what's nonsense, you know, then you can be very effective. And you've dug up the goods on a bunch of stories that people thought were dead and buried. And you find like some other tidbit and it's like, God damn, now I got to examine the whole thing again. Go back and look at TWA 800 or, you know what I mean?
It gets exhausting. And the NATO truck footage, because I saw
the stills. NATO truck footage.
Stills from that footage in the mid 2000s. And now I don't know if that website exists anymore that it was on, because they've been wiping Columbine way before Sandy Hook for years. There were other shooters that jumped out off the roof even, or it like jumped over fences and into, you know, the neighborhood and everything. There was footage of the other suspects getting away on purpose, but it gets wiped away with the sands of time.
And what you get better at doing, I think, the longer you sort of have an interest in these topics, is you get better at pattern recognition, where you go, this is the theme that they use. This is the, you know, manifesto. Got to have manifesto agenda. There's always some agenda. There's a component of the gun that they're using that's unusual that wants to get banned. And then immediately afterwards, legislation appears to take care of the very thing that just happened to happen. You know, and so you get shooters die.
Meanwhile, the killing weapon was in the trunk the whole time, Sandy Hook, you know,
and then glaring mistakes that are just really kind of obvious. And so like I did this to my mom when the San Bernardino shooting happened. She was over at my house and she just coincidentally was over. It was like noon and
that was three suspects with camo on, right?
We turned the TV on and it was like San Bernardino shooting, and I muted it and I turned to her and I said, you and I both don't know anything about this, but I'm going to tell you five things about this story that we don't know anything about. And if I get all five of these right, will you believe me that this is a fake shooting or that this was staged and made to happen?
Right.
And she's like, go for it. And I went through, I said, there will be reports early on of men in military fatigues, but that will get buried. There will be a manifesto. The shooters will be a minority group, you know, and they'll kill them. And then the media will contaminate the crime scene.
Yeah.
And we just watched over things the next week as that happened. And it was like, she goes, okay, I,
This pattern,
you know, it felt like a magic trick. And I just said, yeah. it's not like you said about Bill Cooper, not having a crystal ball. It's not a crystal ball. No. It's pattern recognition. It's getting good at recognizing the things that they always have in common. And it fit this very cookie cutter sort of blueprint for how to do these things. There's all little variations on it, of course, but that's just different flavoring. But like the structure is still the same, where they've got to release. There's a mission to this. There's a point to it. You know, the manifesto has to say that they're mad about a particular thing and paint that demographic as being unhinged and crazy. And then here comes legislation to regulate them right on top of it, as if it was pre-written before.
Because it was.
Right. You know? And so you start to see these things and you go, how many of these do I need to see before I start to recognize that they're lining up? Not perfect, not exactly the same every single time, but just very, very similar. And
sometimes it goes against it too.
One component that is always part of it is a compliant media. And that's where I got to feel my real distrust for the mainstream media is that I've described it as there, you know, whether it be JFK, 9/11 or COVID, the media is always driving the getaway car. Always.
You're right.
They're always involved in that. You know, they're always involved in the cover up of it, suppressing some stories, elevating other stories, shutting out this whole line of questioning, framing anyone asking questions as kooks and dangerous to society, and you start to see this and you just grow this contempt for the media because they're so disgusting in what they do. And they do it intentionally, right? Because it's part of this whole apparatus of control. And that's why they got, you know, their own tentacle in the book, because the media's version of this is integral. The lies of war.
Without them, they
don't
would
work
not
without the media.
Exactly.
You've got to have control of them. If you've got control of the messaging, then you're in charge. But you start to see anything that threatens that control of the message to become viewed as a real threat. So like us, social media, our reach on social media has to be declined. You know, video platforms have to kick us off. I mean, mine's been kicked off.
Right. The Restrict Act, which really kind of
Restrict Act. Yeah. All these things. If they're out in the open now. They don't care if you see their blatant criminality. They don't care. If they get the Restrict Act in and they can silence everybody and put you in prison for the things you say online, they win. So they're just sprinting to the finish line. Between that and central bank digital currencies, the mask is off. They want that control of us because they intend to lock the prison cell doors behind them on the way out. That's why they want it. And we cannot be vocal enough about this.
Now, do you think, Charlie, honestly, do you think that could very well be the next school shooting type thing or insurrection type thing? Is that literally what Bill Cooper would talk about, the FEMA camp rounding all of us up that just question the narrative?
Here's how I envision it going down. A digital false flag, okay, where something bad happens. Let's just call it a school shooting.
Okay.
But in the future, and this is a fictional scenario I'm making up just to prove a point. But in this fictional scenario, I can envision there's a school shooting and a bunch of kids die. And it was one guy who had a AR-15, of course, and he was probably a Christian nationalist or something like that. Right. You know, they'll get a couple of those things buried in there.
Yeah.
And it will turn out, after a full examination of his social media accounts, that he had been bragging about planning on doing this and talking about doing this online for months, weeks and months leading up to this event. But he had been using a VPN and a fake name and an alias. And we didn't know that it was him because we couldn't figure out where he was and who he was. And if only we had been able to figure out, if only we'd had an internet ID card that had your biometrics and your name and your IP address and where you live and all this stuff. If only we'd had that, then this shooting wouldn't have happened. And therefore, in order to prevent the next fictional account shooting, we're going to have to introduce an internet ID card. That is how I see it playing out. That's how I see the next false flag playing out, a digital false flag. And I will say this as of April 6th, 2023, you know, and just put a timestamp on it. At some point, that's what I think you'll see, a sort of false flag that ties back to their social media profile.
And well, then it's got to be conspiracy theorists, right?
8chan, they've been radicalized on Telegram, they've been talking about it on Reddit, they've been talking about it on Twitter, they've been, and this guy was everywhere and yet nowhere. We couldn't figure it out. And if we'd only known who he was, we could have prevented this before. Look at these children, look at these bicycles, Chris, look at these
and the shoes.
Look at this pile of shoes,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How many of these shootings do we have to go through before we realize the importance of an internet ID card? People, what are we doing? How many do you want to kill kids, Chris? Then vote for the internet ID card. You know, so
no, like, I do honestly, not initially.
I'm being kind of like insanely over the top, but am I?
That's how these people act sometimes, even the coroners. I won't mention a certain event. But there's victims' families that are doing stuff that is unnatural, you know?
Right.
And that was an element that I keep stressing that was added to the false flag in the beginning of the last decade. In my opinion, it was this Twilight Zone element to it.
Like they brought in a science fiction director or something. There he's like, let's add one lunatic to the mix.
Yeah,
that can't keep a straight face when he's supposed to be delivering bad news. Let's see if they notice. Let's see how dumb these people are. Grief-stricken parents.
Charlie, I'll tell you this: even a Monsignor that Don Jeffries, our good friend Don Jeffries, told me about. I had to go, and it took me a long time, but I went and I found the footage he was talking about. There was a Monsignor at an event in December of 2012, I'll just say it that way, mm-hmm. where he appears to be laughing while he's talking about dead kids and the parents going to the place.
Again,
it's not an accident, in my opinion. I don't know.
Sometimes there people will say, well, that doesn't prove anything. And you know what? They're absolutely right. It doesn't prove
unnatural.
Anything. But it is super unnatural. Okay. Yeah. And if you get one of those, then whatever. If you are able to do a compilation video of all of these, and then you know that there's a concept called duping delight, which is a real thing where you take pleasure out of knowing that you are pulling a fast one and a big lie on the person that you're talking with. And it shows in your face a smile while you're telling them something bad or you're lying to them. It's an unconscious response to it.
And you see I'm getting away with something.
You see it over and over again in these things, you know? And again, like, does it prove anything? No,
no, but
it certainly doesn't prove anything.
It attracts research,
but it's not information that should be discarded. It should most definitely be put in a folder of unusual. And then if you get enough of those unusual things all piling up, then you go, well, this is, maybe it's not unusual. Maybe it is the way these things play out. Maybe it's just that this is another pattern that we're recognizing. So it's like, I keep wanting to not put my tinfoil hat on, but they keep giving me reasons to, you know?
Right. But anyway, Charlie, I don't want to take up more of your time that you've already graciously have given to me today.
Well, but I appreciate talking to you, and I appreciate the work that you do. And I think that there's people out there that should, when it comes to the alternative media, this is not a line of work or a hobby you get into to make money.
No.
You know? So no. There's just simply not that's not really a thing here. You do it because you love doing it. So I always
people wake up. There's
people out there that have more money than time, and you can support the alternative media. Please donate money. But if you've got more time than you have money, which is you know, most of us here, yeah. Then share the shows and get them out and send them to people and say, hey, listen, you know, like do what you can to spread the word. I mean, I'm so appreciative of you and the work that you do, and the, you know, it's like a constant flow.
Vice versa.
It's like a constant drip of information and stories that I just see that you're just putting there. And I can just click on that and go, hey, I'm into that. Let me check it out. So I just wanted to let you know that we recognize you and that we think that you're the best in the business at research. And we're always pretty excited to get your shit. Usually really good. And we've never heard of it ourselves. So
I appreciate it. But I want you to be able to tell everyone that you have a new show on the radio that you have. And I want you to be able to promote everything, Charlie.
Well, I've got a TNT Radio.live is the radio station. They're an Australian based internet radio. They've got some good presenters. I've been into their stuff now for a couple of months, and I had been on some of the shows. I know some of the hosts and had been on as a guest on a few of the shows and started interacting with their producers quite a bit. And then the owner of the radio station turns out listens to Macroaggressions and reads my books. Cool. So they
always had a spot,
they had a spot open on Saturdays and for 2 hours. And so I wound up getting a radio show over there. So Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern.
Okay.
TNTradio.live is the website, and then it goes out as a podcast later. But what's fun about it, Chris, what I'm last week was my first episode. I had Billy Ray Valentine and
Tony
Arterburn is my first two guests, which makes sense. Two good friends, two radio guys that I really respect. So I had them on, and it goes out in Australia, where the company is based, at midnight on Saturday night. So I've got so it's kind of got a little coast to coast
AM.
Concerned. So in honor of Art Bell, I made sure to open up a time traveler hotline. I announced a time traveler hotline on it. So any time travelers, and I'm going to do that at the beginning of every show. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows that phone line is open.
Now, are you going to get
in honor of the great Art Bell?
Are you going to get mad if a certain person by the name of John Titor calls in but sounds like someone like myself? Are you going to get mad at that?
Nope, wouldn't get mad at that, John. Oh man, that's
John Titor.
Yep. So, so yeah. And it just was, so anyway, I've got a radio show. It'll go out as a podcast as well. 2 hours, two different interviews.
Yeah.
I've got Ken Ami coming on, this Saturday. He's an author. He and I did a book together. I contributed a chapter to a book called Hollywood Aliens and UFOs, which he just put out. So, he's going to be on, and Mel Kay is going to be on. She's more conservative leaning.
I got to talk to her on Union of the Unwanted that time.
Yeah. Mel's cool. So, those are my guests, and thanks for having me on. And anyone that wants to buy my books, you can go to Amazon and do that. You can go to my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression, which I have fun on Twitter yelling at robots. So, yeah.
And you're on band.tv, right?
And band.video. Yeah. We're there. Obviously Union of the Unwanted. I'm one of the four co-hosts of Union of the Unwanted. And also I do a really fun, definitely the thing that's going to get me kicked off the internet type of show called Day Zero with some guys. We do that on Sunday. Me, Corey Hughes, XCube 420, and Lindsay Sharman.
Is that not to be confused with Sam Tripoli show Zero?
Not to be confused. Yeah, different. Okay. His Zero show is like spiritual.
Yeah.
And Day Zero is like, fuck the government, we're making guillotines.
You're awesome, Charlie.
But it's all comedy and it's all make believe. But like,
I need that in comedy. Anyway, in closing, I just wanted to say that I have some good friends that put out a podcast called Knights of the Storm, and they would very much love to have you as a guest at some point. So
cool. I'll do it.
All right, Charlie.
Tell them to reach out to me for sure.
That is fantastic. And you are the man, and you've helped me out in many different kinds of ways. And I always will appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you too. So
I can't wait to
share the show.